Okay, everybody, we're going to be covering three things today. The first of which is the U.S. men's national team lost to Panama 1-0. And no matter where you happen to be in the American soccer ecosystem, it's important to follow what is happening at the professional level and at the national team level, because in a large part, that is what drives this whole machine. So if it's unhealthy up there, it's unhealthy down below. If it's healthy up there, it is healthy down below. And unfortunately, the mainstream media does a terrible job of depicting the reality of situations. And that is what we're here for. So we're going to discuss that. The second thing that we're going to discuss is the USL's big announcement that they were going to implement, quote unquote, promotion and relegation amongst its different tiers, presuming that they get a Division I sanction from U.S. Soccer, so they would have a Division I, a Division II, and Division III leagues, and then some sort of mechanism of promotion relegation. We discuss, again, things that are not discussed in the mainstream, and it's not like we're trying to come up with a different angle. This is actually, we're rooted in global fundamental principles, and those are the things that develop our worldview and our mental model of what's happening here in American soccer. And unfortunately, again, the mainstream media is not rooted in those sorts of things. So you have a complete distortion of reality. So with that, we're going to pick apart a bit about the USL announcement. Is it actually promotion relegation? If yes, great. If it's not, then what actually is it? And how will this impact Major League Soccer? And how will that have a whole trickle-down effect on the youth system here in the United States? And then lastly, I address a couple of questions that came my way via email. I get email regularly, but I think it's about time that I start trying to address some of these things in audio format. That way I can be a little bit more thorough, and that way, you know, I have a reference, kind of like a frequently asked question thing that I can point people to. Because I have found myself, since we launched our first product in 2013, that I'm answering the same sorts of questions regularly, and it's just not a very good use of, it's a really stupid use of my time, if I'm being sincere here. So that, we'll end the episode with that. And then, of course, if you happen to be new to 343, this is the podcast where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. We have decades of coaching experience, and this comes from people who have an Argentine heritage. So soccer has been in the blood our entire lives. And we do not take any sponsors on this podcast because we are not going to be beholden to anybody. Our narratives are not going to be somebody else's narratives. We are not going to peddle somebody else's agenda. So no sponsors here. We sponsor ourselves. And the way we do that is through a couple of products and services that you can find online. The first is for coaches, that is found at 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there. This is all rooted in the pioneering work of my brother, Brian Kleiben, who legitimately shifted the entire American youth landscape here with the work that he did and with the things that he accomplished. And then for parents, we know you want to guide and mentor your kids as best as humanly possible. So we've attempted to codify our multiple decades of experience in the American landscape. We've been involved at the U10 level all the way through the U19 level at all levels thereof. So at the very highest pinnacle, most competitive peak of the pyramid, if you will. And then we've also had experience at the recreational level. And for the past decade or so, we have a lot of experience at the professional level as well. So we've seen the entire pipeline from cradle to grave and for multiple cycles. So we've attempted to codify a whole bunch of the important lessons that parents should be aware of. And that is where you can get it at 343masterclass.com. All right. I hope you enjoy this episode. Benny joins me once more, a phenomenal host that he is. Here we go.
Let's quickly chat USMNT, the game last night. I think there's a lot to dissect from that. I want to first start by asking you, what do you think about the attendance? Because for me, like, everybody looks at the picture of like the empty stadium and they're like, what the fuck? Where's everybody? I think if US soccer was smart, obviously it was a doubleheader yesterday with Mexico playing second in the second game, right? So all of those empty seats, I'm guessing, were the Mexican fans outside the stadium, fucking tailgating. I feel like if US soccer was smart, I mean, you're at home, make that the second game of the night. And I think you would have seen, you know, a bigger crowd in the stands. But at the same time, it's like, again, you're the USMNT, you're at home and semifinal, and the stadium is like that empty. I mean, what are your thoughts on that and the game overall?
Yeah, super fascinating. I observed that as well. And obviously everybody on X was commenting on that. First and foremost, a disclaimer, because I'm not privy to the conversations that happen at US Soccer. I'm not privy to the conversations at CONCACAF. So I don't understand the full on rationale behind it all. But right, putting that aside, you know, one thing I can think of is, you know, CONCACAF may have had considerable say in it, aside from US Soccer as well, because, you know, it's their tournament. And if you're looking at it from a pure monetary perspective, it actually is insightful to think that they're like, hey, let's make the Mexico game the main event, even though it's in the United States. It's quite telling. And it was obviously the game was here in Southern California with a huge Mexican American population. And I like to call them and us Latinos the soccer first demographic. That's because we are huge and we hugely outnumber the MLS demographic, especially here in Southern California, which is the US soccer demographic. So from a pure monetary play, yeah, make Mexico second. But I would suspect that US soccer does have a lot of influence because it's your home territory, right? There's no way that CONCACAF is going to overrule US soccer or tell US soccer how it's going to go down. US soccer has a lot of power. If they want to have the US men's national team be the main event, they would have had the US men's national team be the main event. And so the calculus is interesting because they probably calculated the same thing. They're like, let's make some money. Let's make Mexico go second. Yeah. And then aside from all of that, it is kind of embarrassing and telling that nobody wants to see the national team. Right. You can say all you want. It was 4 p.m. Pacific time. People might still be at work. You know, they can't get the day off work. I get it. I get the logic, but it's not valid in my opinion. Okay. Because if they claim, the fans of the U.S. men's national team or MLS, they claim that they are true hardcores. They are soccer first people too, Gary. Why are you insulting us that we're not soccer first people? That would not have stopped you from going to the men's national team, especially when it's all the A-list guys for the most part. Maybe you have two absences like Anthony Robinson or Serginho Dest, but it's all the A-lister European guys. You want to go see Pulisic. You want to go see McKinney. You want to see Tyler Adams. You want to see Josh Sargent, and on and on and on. The stadium should have been full, and it wasn't. Do you know the attendance figure, Benny? It looked like it was maybe 25%. Capacity, something like that. Completely shocking.
I had some friends that went to the game, Gary, and they posted on Instagram, and like I saw the stadium, I was like, what the fuck, are they at like a college game? Or and then I realized like, oh shit, this is the USMNT playing, and there's like fucking 30% of the stadium full right now. So pretty embarrassing. And you even see like Pulisic, you see him like walk out onto the field and he sees a crowd and he's, you know, he doesn't say it, but his face is like, what the fuck is this, dude? You know, so pretty embarrassing. But you're right, Gary, I think it's pretty telling. Like you always say, the soccer first demographic here is not the Americans, it's the Mexican Americans. And you know, the Mexico game seemed pretty full. I mean, not obviously not 100% full, but still more fans in the US and even more like enthusiasm in the game. No,
yeah, and I wasn't capable of watching that whole game. I was able to tune in and out whenever I could. And you know, if a Mexican national team game isn't full, there actually is a reason for that that's different. And that is the Mexican Americans are legit soccer first people. And if they're pissed off, for instance, at their national team, they're pissed off at their club, they will fucking like not all out boycott, but they'll be like, fuck them, they suck, I'm not going, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is very different than the US men's national team here. The people who support the U.S. men's national team, they don't do that stuff. They just want to go and be entertained and tailgate and party and talk about their daughter's prom and just fucking nonsense. You know, go have a couple beers and nachos. They'll go to the game whether the team sucks ass or doesn't.
Yeah, for sure. I have a feeling, Gary, some like U.S. fans after the U.S. game, they lost. They're all like sad. They're like, fuck this. I'm not staying to watch Mexico play with all these rowdy fans. But yeah, it's shocking, dude. It's shocking. But you, I saw you posted on X. You know, I laughed at the tweet. You know, you put in, all of a sudden you put in, you know, three MLS players and boom, the game is done, dude. So
the game is done. Soccer's so interesting, Ben, because I say this over and over again, it needs to be emphasized. I'm going to keep repeating it. It's not physics. It's not mathematics. It's not engineering. So that means it's open for anybody and everybody to say whatever the hell they want. And there's always some sort of logical defense of what anybody is saying. So for instance, they might say, oh, look, all our Europeans can't even compete with Panama or whatever. But like the U.S. could have won 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, 2-1, 5-1. Like they could have won or just scored one goal in the 80th minute or 70th minute or whatever it is. And nobody would be talking shit right now. They would say things like, oh, Pochettino's got them firing on all cylinders. It looks good. You know, he had Sergino Dest missing, Anthony Robinson missing. It didn't matter. Look at the experiment with Pulisic as the number 10 in the middle worked. You know, all that had to happen was for them to score one goal for soccer to go their way. And those would be the narratives now in the media all over the place. And soccer being what it is, it didn't go that way. It went the other way. You know, Panama had and just a couple opportunities, put one in the goal. The U.S., you know, missed their chances. And all the narratives now are like, oh, Pochettino's a fraud. We wasted $6 million on this guy. We should have an American coach. Look, it wasn't Greg Berhalter's fault after all, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why can't people just, I don't know, man. No, it's, dude, hard. It's like the American soccer MLS demographic doesn't have their footing on solid principles. And that's why they sway one way or the other way, depending on, you know, a game's results.
No, dude, it's all about the result. And like, even if you look up like the headlines of the fucking newspapers, like ESPN's headline is like, USMNT loses to Panama again in the worst performance of Pochettino's era. It's like, what the, you guys have no idea what you're talking about. Or people that, even at like the fans at halftime on Twitter, it's 0-0 obviously, but I thought the U.S. was bossing the game, and the commentary on halftime is like, this is boring, like Pochettino sucks. But you're right, Gary. I mean, one goal goes their way and the narrative is Pochettino is a hero, things are looking up, new generation. But
Completely different. The game could have been identical. Benny, the game could have been identical except for two micro changes. The U.S. scores and Panama doesn't score its opportunity. Just those two things, but everything else completely identical. And the narratives would be completely 180 degrees apart.
Yeah, for sure. What are your thoughts on Gio Reyna? I know Pochettino said he had planned to use him, you know, if the game were to go into overtime and he was ready to use them, but would you have, you know, brought him in earlier? What are your current thoughts on Gio Reyna?
There's so many things to discuss. They're all opinion-based and it's very hard to know, especially because he hasn't played very much club football either. He's been MIA. I'm just going to throw out a few thoughts for people to chew on because these are thoughts that aren't out in the mainstream. Number one, Pochettino opted for Jack McGlynn instead of Gio Reyna. From my vantage point, at that particular moment in the game, what Jack McGlynn brings to the table is more creativity than was there previously in the midfield. He is a creative player. He is a very good distributor and can potentially pick the lock of a defense that's sitting back. You know, and Panama was obviously in a 5-4-1 or 4-5-1, something of that nature. So there's a lot of potential there to crack the game open. And Gio brings that as well. Okay. So, and Gio might bring it more so than Jack in that regard as well, because there's some dribbling capabilities that Gio has that Jack does not. However, in my opinion, Poch's rationale would be something like, well, Jack brings us more stability and will keep us bossing the game and won't destabilize the team. Whereas Gio would be destabilizing defensive issue for Pochettino because he's wild. He goes all over the place. He is very poor in defensive positioning or in tracking back or in pressing the opponent. And so he's a liability in that regard, whereas Jack would continue maintaining the structure, order, and discipline of the entire group. So he wanted control, is my opinion. And that's why Jack went in and not Gio, which I support. I think it's fine. I think it's a good thing because Panama would be dangerous on the break, and having Gio there in the middle might be a problem. So, and same thing with Diego Luna. I think Jack is a lot more of a quote-unquote professional, if that makes sense to our English-speaking audience, than Diego. Yeah, well, the soccer god said, let's have Panama score a goal. And at that point, I don't know. I think it's a little bit too late.
Yeah, for sure. And to your point, Gary, about like narratives, let's say he does throw in Gio Reyna or Diego Luna and it's the same result, then everybody fucking attacks Pochettino. Like, what the fuck are you doing? You should have put in Jack. And so
you should have put Gio Reyna earlier. Why did you wait until then put him in?
Yeah. 100%.
It wouldn't be Gio's fault. You know, it wouldn't be Diego's fault. It would be like, you should have started this player from the get-go.
No, yeah. It's always Pochettino's fault, no? Or whoever the head coach is, dude.
It's politics. This is what politics is. And this is why the vast majority of country engages in politics. Because whatever you say, there's a logical structure to it and can be defended. And you can't be proven wrong. People don't like being proven wrong, Benny. And so that's why so many engage in politics, because nobody can prove you wrong, as opposed to doing mathematics or physics or engineering. Like, no, either you know how to build a bridge or you don't. Either you can build a rocket or you can't. Either you can solve this equation or you can't. There's right and wrong.
Yeah. Why do we keep losing to Panama, Gary? That's third loss in a row. I think it's like a mental block or what is it?
No, I think Panama's good, man. I think Panama has a lot of good players. And there's this really crazy bias that exists with the American mainstream demographic, is that they look at pedigree all the time. They're like, where do the players play? How much are they, quote unquote, worth on transfer market? Those sorts of things. And so they think that on paper, player A is better than player B. And that's just not how soccer truly is. Many of these players that are on Panama's team, if they were Americans or if they were, you know, South Americans or something like that, they too would be in Europe. They too would be maybe on AC Milan or Juventus or Bournemouth or, you know, West Ham or Fulham. And they would have a good chunk of players overseas. But the American public doesn't see it that way. They're like, oh, look at these scrubs. You know, how is it that our European players can't beat these scrubs? Well, they aren't scrubs. And if you watch the first maybe 25 minutes of the first half, you know, if my memory serves me correctly, they were playing out of the back under immense U.S. pressure. The U.S. was pressing high and with numbers. And Panama just didn't launch it forward. They're like, tuck, tuck, tuck. And they would get out. You can't do that if you're a scrub. So that's my explanation, Benny. These are good players. This is a well-coached team. Are they as good as the U.S. men's national team? No. And that is why they played a 4-5-1 low block and looked for their opportunities on the break. Because if you are pound for pound way better than your opponent, you don't do that.
Right. Regardless of the score, Gary, you know, obviously we all know U.S. lost, but you know, what did you think of their performance? I mean, they had 67% possession, you know, 5 shots on target. Do you think they created chances and played well, or do you think there's still a lot of work to do?
I think given how Panama presented their game plan and being extremely low block defensive, I think they did very well. The U.S. did. And some of the things that folks have to appreciate how difficult it is to break down a team that's disciplined like that. It's so difficult. I mean, the best teams in the world have an extraordinarily hard time doing so. Again, I would encourage a lot of our American audience to watch CONMEBOL qualifying. Watch when Brazil has to go and play Bolivia or Venezuela or Paraguay, or you know what I mean, where there's a mismatch, or when Argentina has to go and play these teams. And if those teams present themselves like Panama does, even the best teams in the world have a extraordinary complicated time to break them down. And if it weren't for players like Vinny Jr. or Rodrigo or Rafinha or Messi or Di Maria, or like outlier world-class players, they would probably look like the U.S. men's national team did last night also, you know, circulating the ball, doing it as fast as possible, trying to penetrate from the outsides, which is the correct game plan when you have an opponent like this, or maybe try lightning combinations down the middle, and you might draw the game or you might lose the game. And it happens to Brazil and Argentina as well. Okay. So to put a nice little bow on it, I think given the circumstances, I saw a lot of good things from the U.S.
Yeah. Last thing in terms of this game, Gary, their commentary. I know you also posted about the fucking commentators. It seems like every game they have to fucking plug the MLS or talk about how good it is or talk about how MLS is on the rise.
It's so bad. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
It's so bad, man. It's so bad. They just can't help themselves. It's like they can't go a single half, 45 minutes without plugging MLS once or twice or three times. Like, I know, obviously they're just compromised, Benny. Like these folks who are broadcasters, they want to please the monopoly so that they can continue being employed or have a future gig with the monopoly. So let's say that these guys who are broadcasting on CBS get fired one day or whatever, they'll have a landing spot in professional soccer here in the United States with a franchise, with the league, with a front office somewhere, or with a media outlet because they've been good little boys.
Yeah. And it's not even like they're contractually obligated to talk about it. They're just doing it to kiss the boot and secure their jobs.
Okay, let's move on. I'm gonna be here 30 minutes talking shit.
Yeah. This is a side note, and it just came to mind when you were talking about the game, but I'm sure you've seen the new San Diego MLS team and this whole like chant. You know the chant I'm talking about, the puto chant on every goal. Sure. Kick. And you see, it's so funny here because you see San Diego coming out after every game like, hey, like every club does, right? There's no place for this, you know. If you can't follow this rule, like, don't be a fan of the club. And you go through the comments on those posts, Gary, and it's just thousands of people saying like, what's wrong with you guys? You guys are retarded. There's some guy that commented like, I'm gay and I'm a soccer fan and I don't find the chant offensive. It's funny to me. But so what, I mean, obviously from the club's perspectives, I mean, they kind of have to
franchise,
do that, right?
What you want.
Yeah. The franchise. Thanks for correcting me. From the franchise's perspective, you know, they have to kind of put that stuff out there. But yeah, I mean, it's just, well, what do you think about this whole situation, Gary? Do you think it's going to stop the fans? And two, I mean, I don't know, in Mexico or in different cultures around the world, it's like people don't see this as offensive, but here it's like this cancel culture that exists. I know this is completely random, but it just came to my mind. I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah. Look, even right now, I still feel a little pressure to say the right thing. So I think that demonstrates why the franchise takes the position it takes. The league takes the position it takes. A whole swath of folks here in the United States take the position that they take is because you have this little pressure, right, that exists, or this threat or this sword of Damocles hanging over your head if you say the wrong thing. That aside, yes, the reality of it is that it is not a homophobic chant. It is not. This is the Mexicans or the Mexican Americans or whoever is participating in that is not, when they do that, they are not saying we hate gay people. That doesn't even cross their minds at all. Zero. It is simply, I don't know, kind of like, I don't even want to say an insult, but obviously puto is like an insult, but you don't use it at the way that the franchise is saying that it is used for, the league says that it is used for, or the entire left liberal media says that it is used for. That is not the intent at all. So do I personally have a problem with it? I don't know. I look at stadiums, and if there's I just hate that this is even an issue, Benny. Honestly, it's just so dumb. It's so dumb. And from my perspective and how you were mentioning folks in the comments perspectives, they're looking at this virtue signaling in many respects by folks as a turnoff. And now, yeah, we aren't going to support you because you aren't real, and you're not trying to be real. You are a virtue signaler and going along with this woke ideology.
Right. But at the end of the day, Gary, the franchise kind of has no choice but to do that, right? Because doesn't the league come out and say like, oh, if you continue to do it in the next game, you're going to get fined or you're going to lose points. So the franchise has to say things like that, no?
Yeah. I understand. I'm empathetic with business.
Right.
I understand it all.
Yeah. No, but like you said, Gary, for people that truly like come from that Hispanic culture, like when they're calling somebody puto, it's not because they're saying like, oh, you're gay, or it's just like, just an insult. But, you know, a lot of people don't get it.
Yeah, it's just an insult. It's just an insult. Like Argentinians saying boludo or tarado or imbécil or hijo de puta or all that sort of stuff. Like, it's just a regular insult that exists. And there is zero going through your mind about your sexuality.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I don't, even when the franchise does post that, I feel like it just encourages the fans to like want to do it more, you know? And it's like, what are they going to do? Like fucking duct tape every mouth of the person that comes through the stadium or what?
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult for them to stop, honestly, because even if they wanted to crack down and say, hey, if we see you doing it, we ban you for life or something like that. Okay, so guess what? People would just put bandanas over their mouths or whatever and then just like, okay.
Yeah.
You ain't going to stop it.
Yeah.
We're going to take points. We're going to take points away from the team or whatever. Who gives a fuck? They don't care.
Yeah. I mean, Gary, look at San Diego is literally right next to the border of Mexico. So you have all those fans coming in and it'll be hard to
even
stop
more
them.
So. Yeah. Even more so. So who are you really for? You know, look at the demographic down there in San Diego. Who are you really trying to? So you really aren't trying to represent that group.
Right.
You're trying to represent the people that I've always said MLS is of, by, and for. You're trying to represent the white suburban, goody two shoe, non demanding demographic. That's who you want.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Gary. Well, last time we recorded on the USL was before they had made their vote and officially announced that they're going to implement, you know, promotion relegation. I think a lot of people are getting the idea confused of what it actually is and thinking that it's an open system when truly it's not, right? Because there's three levels within the USL's, you know, plan for promotion relegation. But we talked about it last time for like a smaller local club that wants to, and am I correct in able to call this a club, like OSC Rage, for example, like if they wanted to start, there's no way to, you know, work their way into the USL. You kind of have to buy your way into the lowest league, right? So
that's my current understanding that you're still going to have to buy into it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so I see like a quote from the president coming out saying like, oh, this is going to be a great opportunity now for local communities to build their teams up and work their way into the system. But at the end of the day, that's just not true. Right. You're still going to have to buy and, you know, purchase your way. So maybe you can clear it up again for a lot of the folks who think that, oh, this is, you know, this is truly an open system now. Promotion relegation is coming to the U.S. This is going to change everything. I mean, is it a step in the right direction, Gary, or is there still a long way to go?
Let's circle back around to, is it truly an open is it a good, or is it a step in the right direction? Let's circle back around to that. So first off, the open system thing, this means an open marketplace, an open economy, and leagues don't do open economies. Leagues are the envelope that contains everything within them. And so if the entire quote unquote promotion relegation falls under the command of one entity, which is the league here, then is it truly open? What should regulate or what does regulate an economy is an outsider, not the business itself. So that's why we have government. That's why we have regulators. And in the soccer ecosystem, that is why countries have federations. Okay. So a federation is comprised of a whole bunch of different independent entities. And the federation, being the regulator of the ecosystem, comes up with the rules of the general ecosystem as a whole. So it should be the federation that's saying, okay, this is division one, this is division two, this is division three. These are the rules. And all the clubs that participate within those divisions are completely independent entities. And division one is run by a particular business or league. Division two is run by a separate business and a separate league. Division three, separate business, separate league. It can't be one organization that envelopes all of the leagues. So in that regard, it's not open already. The other thing that is troubling with the open concept is having to buy into the system. Like you said, Benny, like it's still a franchise system, because if I want to start in the lowest tier of USL, say USL League One, I suppose is what's going to be the third division for them. I don't know what the purchase price is, but you kind of have to come up with several million bucks. I don't know if it's 5 million, 4 million. I have no idea. And then that coupled with some sort of application, which I don't know what that even looks like, you have to submit to be able to operate. So again, it's not really an open ecosystem versus, say, in software world or in hardware world out here in the general economy, any old hacker can just start a business without paying anybody off. Okay, maybe if they want to incorporate as an LLC here in California, okay, you pay $800 to the government, but you start it and you go, right? Or if you want to start a restaurant or something like that, okay, you're going to have to buy the infrastructure that is the restaurant or whatever and hire employees or something, but you don't pay some other business $5 million to be able to have the privilege of starting a restaurant here in Fullerton, California. You know what I mean? But here, having to buy a franchise and say, here's $5 million USL. Thank you for letting me operate this business of mine now. Now I can operate a business. That's not open.
Yeah. It'll be curious to see as well, like the territory rights. Like, for example, there's a team here in Orange County, OCFC. If I want to go and start a team within the same county, are they going to say, no, there's already this team operating here? Or are they going to say, hey, this is, you know, go ahead. But I don't foresee it happening that way, at least initially, right?
Yeah, that's huge, Benny. That's the other half, and literally the other half of why it's not open. If it's open, anybody can start a club anywhere.
Yeah.
And nobody can get in your way. Yeah, I should be able to start a rival club to Orange Soccer Club literally 2 miles away if I wanted to. Right here, right next door, or in the same park. It's in the Great Park. If I want to start a competing club right there in the same bloody park, I should be able to.
Yeah.
That would be an open ecosystem.
Do you think now, Gary, now that there is, you know, some type of promotion relegation within these leagues, do you think the USL clubs will start to implement like youth programs and youth academies to try and like develop players for their first team? Or is it still not that? Not necessary, because they can just go in and buy anybody.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not exactly sure. I think that one major positive from the youth perspective is that with this quote unquote fake promotion relegation, which is better than nothing, in my opinion, we can circle back around to that. There will be a greater incentive for the youth players who happen to be part of a particular USL club, for them not to have to say, oh man, if I want to make it, I got to jump ship to an MLS academy, or that I have to jump ship to go to an MLS Next club or an MLS Next 2 club. No, I don't have to do that, because my club has a first team. It's competing either in the first division of USL or the second division of USL, or the third division of USL. And you can still go up and down through those divisions. So if you're a youth player, You're like, nah, I'm sticking here. They say that they value me. They say that they see a future for me in their first team. I'm not going to jump ship to MLS Next. I'm good. No problem. So that disrupts the MLS master plan of taking over absolutely everything, which is what they've been trying to do now with the youth system. They, by creating MLS Next, and now this year creating MLS Next 2, they're saying, we're taking over everything. The youth, ECNL, go F yourself. We're taking over. All these other leagues, go F yourselves. We're taking over. All the best players are ours. Now we control the entire country. So that there's a monkey wrench being thrown in that now with USL having promotion and relegation. Now, will USL clubs, franchises, clubs, they're more clubs than the MLS franchises. That's for 100% sure. And if folks don't know why, you should look up single entity and what single entity actually means. Will these new USL clubs start their own youth systems? It remains to be seen, but what's good, a truly open system will not create rules or impose to these clubs whether you should or shouldn't do it. USL, and nobody should tell these clubs whether they should have a youth system or youth academy or not have a youth academy. They are independent businesses. Let them do what they see fit. Okay. So some clubs probably will. Some clubs might not. Some clubs might partner with local clubs and say, hey, you're part of our pipeline. Maybe use our badge or whatever. Who knows? We need to leave it completely open for them to decide what they want to do.
I know we talked about, you know, if the U.S. were truly to implement promotion relegation, not that pay-to-pay would go away completely, but it would be, you know, eliminated in some regards. Do you think this will happen as well? Because, I mean, if there is a true path to get to, you know, the top division and, you know, I'm Oakland roots, you know, why wouldn't I want to have investors come in and pour money into my youth academy and, you know, get all these talented players in without having to pay so much money? So, you know, hopefully that can happen. So do you think that can have a benefit?
I think so, Benny. I think so. Everything, in my opinion, is contingent upon USL getting a Division I sanction from the Federation. Because if you are sanctioned as a first division, then the entire ecosystem understands that there's a path to the very top of the pyramid. And that is truly what will incentivize investment the lower levels. Because if US Soccer does not do that, and US Soccer members controlled by MLS, so this is we're going to see what happens, okay? If USL is still stuck with their top tier being the second division, then that does not incentivize massive investment at the lower levels, because the highest you can go is second division and you're still branded as a quote unquote minor league, not just here locally, but globally, you're perceived as a minor league. And then things like competing in international competitions, things like getting called to the national teams and having your player valuation skyrocket, things like trying to sell players overseas, all of that is greatly devalued if you are Division II. Okay. So first and foremost, they need the Division I sanction. And then if that happens, yes, Benny, even if it's not open, I do believe there's going to be a significant influx of people saying, okay, now that there's a path, I will invest way more money than has been invested in USL previously. Starting from the third division, no problem. Even though I think it's fucked up to have to pay $5 million to be USL League One franchise and operate, like we said before, people will hand that over, no problem. They're going to pop up all over the place, Benny. The whole map, in my opinion, we'll see, it has to be managed well. The whole map will be lit up, you know, with third division USL clubs at that point. I also believe that the big youth clubs around the country, whether it be San Diego Surf or you name them, they have the wherewithal, if not by themselves, but certainly to attract the requisite investment to finally have their own first teams.
Yeah, which would be awesome. Gary, I'm trying to understand though, like the necessity of this Division I sanction. I mean, like, okay, oh, USL, you are now Division I sanctioned, but what's the point of that if everybody's just going to look at MLS as being the top league in the US? or is it going to shift? And now that USL does have Division One sanction, is everybody going to say like, oh, this USL league is now better than MLS? The best players go there. Is that shift going to happen or not? Because of obviously MLS has been here operating as the number one league for what, the past 29 years now, right? So yeah. What's the point of having that Division One sanction?
No, it's a great question. I think a lot of it depends on how open this truly is versus how closed it is. Because in a completely open system, the owners of USL clubs, first off, there wouldn't be any salary caps, okay? So the owners of USL clubs would be free to invest as much as they want and buy as many players as they want for whatever salaries that they want. And USL owners in general aren't total slouches. For example, if you look at San Antonio, that's owned by the San Antonio Spurs, okay? You don't think that they can go and get designated player caliber players to play for the team? Of course they can. Of course they can. So that will be the one thing that MLS has going against it if they keep their current rules in place, is that they don't have all that freedom to buy whoever it is that they want to buy. USL would have that freedom. And of the current USL owners or future USL owners, if they don't have the wherewithal, if they don't have the billions of dollars, like MLS owners are worth billions of dollars, well, guess what? Billionaires will come into the league. Billionaires will come and say, you know what? MLS doesn't let me buy a franchise. So for example, I always tell this story because it came from a legal fit, high-level league executive told many, many years ago, there were five legitimate bidders for the LAFC franchise, okay? Five legitimate investor groups worth billions and billions of dollars, and only one got it, okay? So those other four weren't able to get an MLS franchise. Well, okay, well, those other four, I don't know who they are, and countless others now have the capability of buying into an open ecosystem. Nobody could tell them no, right? There is no MLS gatekeeper now, and they can earn their way up or down the ladder, and they have all the resources necessary and all the political connections necessary to blow this thing out of the water. So there's less, what I'm saying, Benny, is that in a promotion relegation system, in an open ecosystem, there's less handcuffs on you. So MLS has handcuffs. USL currently has handcuffs. USL hopefully won't have those same handcuffs. And then over the course of time, they'll just eat MLS's lunch. That's on the money side. And it's just more authentic, Benny. It's MLS is the same bloody fucking franchise every single year. Half the teams make the playoffs. At the end of the season, nobody really gives a shit anymore. You know, if you're coming in last or if you're brought ahead, nobody cares. In USL, everybody's going to be especially tuned in towards the end of the season. Like, who's going up and who's going down? I think one of the most watched games on whatever network they happen to be on or whatever will be who in the third division is going to second, who in the second is going to third, who in the second is going to first, who in the first is going to second. It's going to be bananas, Ben.
Yeah.
And with that comes money. All those eyeballs are going to attract sponsors, are going to increase broadcast revenue, and it's just a chain reaction.
Okay, maybe, obviously you saw like fucking Ryan Reynolds going to England and purchasing Wrexham FC. Maybe we're going to see like all these fucking celebrities and movie stars now investing into teams and in their local hometowns, and fuck it, let's make it all the way to the first division. No, it's going to be amazing to see.
Benny, 100%. Maybe you've seen over the course of a handful of years now, many U.S. men's national team former and current players have bought into USL franchise stakes into certain teams. And because, look, all these people with money, all these former players, they can't own a club here in the U.S., Ben. It's MLS or nothing, basically. And MLS, they're just not going to let you. There's limiting the supply. So folks have no choice but to go to USL. You have no choice if you have a lot of money and you want a club.
Right. No, you even see Ronaldinho, Greenville, South Carolina, investing into the team. It's fucking correct. Badass.
Correct. So, and everybody wants access to the U.S. market because we are the biggest, largest soccer market on earth. And we have the biggest economy and the most hungry soccer people whose hunger is not being fulfilled on earth. And there's so much more opportunity here that it's going to attract global investment, Ben. It could be, I mean, Messi's MLS at this point, because he'll have an MLS franchise. I think it's part of his deal or whatever. But how many former players with a shit ton of money around the world will say, you know what, I'm going to buy an American club?
Right. So, okay, Gary, let's say we look at the next 5-10 years. This is all massive success. Money's pouring in. Everybody's coming in. Does MLS allow this to continue happening, or do they try and buy USL and now MLS is a top league and okay, there is promotional relegation? Like, what is going to be MLS's response to this if this takes off?
No, well, I think the first thing, they're going to sabotage this thing, first and foremost. They're going to try to sabotage it. They probably are already, the wheels are in motion with not allowing it to happen way or another. Oh, that's another thing as to why it's not open. So supposedly the Premier League standards, this document that US Soccer published and updates every however many years, supposedly you have to have 75% of the teams in the first division have to be in huge metropolitan areas, you know, in the big cities. It's like, what? That's not open. That's not an open ecosystem. It should be, team could be wherever the hell they want to be, you know, and if they can self-sustain themselves, they will. And if they can't sustain themselves because they're not big cities with a lot of huge demographic, a lot of money, a lot of media, if they can't sustain themselves, well, guess what? Those teams will naturally be relegated over the course of time to the second tier, the third tier, the fourth tier, because their cities maybe can't sustain them. That is extremely restrictive, what U.S. soccer is doing. So this is how MLS has monopolized the market, is by using the market regulator that is U.S. soccer to come up with these rules to screw everybody else over. And so that's one way that MLS is going to, quote unquote, like you said, compete against MLS. Or what are they going to do? They're going to use the market regulator to come up with rules or to figure out a way to screw this whole project up. And if they can't for whatever reason, I don't know what the end game will be. Maybe they will try to make a humongous purchase and unify everything under their umbrella. Maybe that'll be it. Or maybe if you can't beat them, join them. I don't know that. I'm not worrying too much about that. All I care about is this first step.
Are you going to open your own team, Gary?
It's a good question, man. Let's see how open things are. Obviously I would need good partners. I would like to bring good partners aboard. It'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it? I don't know. We'll see. One step at a time, Benny.
Yeah, it would be badass. So last thing on this, Gary, what does USL truly need to do for this to be open? And is it even possible for them to have it, or is it really up to U.S. soccer? Like, is U.S. soccer the deciding factor in whether or not it can be an open market? Can USL come to them and say, hey, we want anybody to, like, for example, the thing you just gave me about the top 75% of the teams have to be in a metropolitan area. Like, that's coming from U.S. soccer, right? That's not coming from USL.
Correct. Yeah. To truly be open, well, you need either a federation that's not corrupt like it is now, or you need a new federation somehow, some way. That's too far off into the future for me to really see how all the dominoes fall at this point. But if USL becomes powerful enough and this becomes a big enough success, then I could see them or the community at large kind of forcing the issue and somehow having once again an independent federation. What does that mean? I don't know. Maybe USL has a lot more representation at the federation level, so much so that it overtakes MLS's representation or equals it, or who knows, Benny? That's a little bit too difficult to really see.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, can you just go and start your own soccer federation to compete with U.S. soccer?
Yeah, you can. I think the main issue there is ultimately being recognized by the confederations then, you know, being recognized by CONCACAF and then ultimately being recognized by FIFA, or being recognized by FIFA first, and then the dominoes fall from that point forward. And just this whole ecosystem, like all ecosystems, are so compromised, full of bureaucrats, full of corruption, that again, will FIFA come in and say, okay, cool, we recognize your federation, or will they be like, no, you already have a federation over there, deal with it?
Right. All right, good. Well, I know I said we're going to talk about, just really quick, about, you know, the 343 coaching course and also the masterclass. So let's give a little love to the coaches that are still out there in the trenches and putting in the work. Somebody had emailed you, Gary. I won't read his whole email, but his main question and his main point is, he says, in my coaching experience, I have primarily worked with smaller sided games such as 7v7 and 9v9. I have not had the opportunity to coach or play an 11v11 system. Given this, I am curious to know if the course content will still be beneficial for someone like me who works with younger age groups and smaller formats. Will the principles and strategies taught in the course be adaptable to the formats I currently use, or is the course strictly tailored to 11v11? So obviously right now he's talking about the 343 coaching education.
Yeah, so the 343 program, again, that was started in late 2013, so over a decade now, and has had upgrades over the years. A lot of the footage deals with Brian's original team, which was playing in the 11 versus 11 format. And back then, they were U11s, okay? So back then, the U11 age group was when you started playing 11 versus 11 also, even though that has changed now. But just because a lot of the match footage was centered around 11v11, does not mean in any way that the first year of the program is tailored to 11v11 at all. It's all about teaching the fundamentals and the fundamental principles of play that develop players technically, that develop players tactically at any age, okay? So things like all the rondos that we demonstrate and how and why they exist, that is irrespective of age. Doesn't matter if you're coaching 7v7, 9v9, or 11v11. And then from the tactical perspective, yes, we're showing you things like, hey, building out of the back with a line of four in the back in on your goalkeeper and a defensive mid. But those sorts of things can be easily adapted to the 9v9 format or the 7v7 format. Instead of having four players, you know, two center backs and two outside backs. Okay, you're playing with three in the back, for instance. No problem. Just do the same sort of exercise, tweak it a little bit, and then off to the races you go. And then from the attacking pattern sort of perspective and losing your man and the midfield play, it doesn't impact you in any way. You see the patterns as we show them, and then you adjust them to the numbers that you've got, and you're off to the races as well. So it is not a specialized course for 11v11.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not sure if this guy knows this, but there is also a 7v7 course that we've launched. But I think you're right, Gary. I think within, like, for me, when I first started coaching, as everybody knows, I had access to the 343 coaching course. And obviously at the time, the 7v7 course wasn't out at the time. But I was still able to use all the fundamental principles of, you know, building out of the back, rondos, giving the players a tactical understanding of the game. And the 3-4-3 course really helped me in my understanding as a coach, but also I think helped me, you know, better plan my sessions, and found that when the kids had a good understanding at those younger ages of like those core concepts, especially that you teach in the rondos, right? Receiving across your body, moving into open space, getting those technical reps in, by the time they did go to 9v9 and 11v11, they were, you know, far superior to other players who had not been doing this type of stuff. So I think the program can work at any age for sure.
Yeah. And over the years, I've gotten many emails from coaches in the program who say, hey, Gary, you know, I coach 7v7 or I coach 9v9, you know, how do I take what you guys have here and adapt it there? And so some coaches are able to adapt everything themselves, I think it's pretty straightforward, but I understand that some coaches may be very new. Benny, maybe it's the first time they're coaching a team, or maybe just their second season ever coaching a team, and they wanted or want more specificity to 7v7. They wanted to know exactly what formation. They want to know exactly, you know, what every position should be doing. And that's why, you know, we partnered up with John Kokoris and said, okay, you know what? Enough people want a super hyper specialized on just 7v7. So let's give it to them, because they might struggle a bit in adapting the principles of the core program. So we launched the 7v7 course. Folks can go to 7v7coaching.com. And the 9v9 specific stuff is coming out soon as well. Actually, I have dedicated, you know, all of this coming week to really crafting those lessons and chiseling those lessons and crisping those lessons up. So that's also coming. But generally speaking, Benny, if you're a coach out there who has a little bit more experience beyond just first year, second year of coaching, you can just take the core program and adapt it.
Right. All right, Gary, there is one other email from, I think this guy has been a member of the coaching program, but now he's asking about 343 Masterclass. And just for a little context, he let us know that he's a dad, but he's also the coach of the team. And so one of the problems that he was having is that, you know, it struggling to find the balance of being the coach and being the dad. And, you know, he's saying that sometimes his kid doesn't listen to him because he's the dad and also the coach. But he wanted to know, well, two things. He says, does the program has physical workouts as well? He does some working out at his school, but it's such a junk program for what he needs. They try to build everyone to be gridiron football players. But more importantly, he asks, last thing I will ask, if I buy this program, can I just turn it over to him? Is there like a list of things he can follow, or do I need to help him plan all of it out? Either way, not a big deal. Just need to know how to help him load balance. And he also mentioned, Gary, where is it? Oh yeah. He says, wanting to make sure that if I purchase this program, it's not only for just beginners or even intermediates. He truly needs the highest level of training outside the practice I can find.
Yeah, it's tough. These are very difficult questions. First, I thank him for asking them. Let me first say on the physical front, no, there's no physical stuff. If by physical, they're referring to, you know, weightlifting and those sorts of things, muscle building or whatever the heck it happens to be, we don't have that in the program. It's something that I've thought about, but since it's mostly geared for youth players, my general sentiment is, hey, man, let's just work on their football specific stuff and not the body, really, even though I think the body is very important. So that's number one. So the last comment is that this player, according to his dad, needs advanced things. Now, I'd like you to chime in here as well, Benny, but a lot of the program has, you know, some of our top former youth players demonstrating the exercises, and all of whom are now professional soccer players. And the exercises that they're demonstrating range from beginner all the way to their current top professional level skills. So for example, you might see, you know, one of our players at the racquetball court standing, I don't know, 15 feet away from the wall and then hitting balls against the wall in the air hard, and the ball comes back at him hard, all in the air. The ball never touches the ground, and you have to keep this thing going on and on and on. Now, if you've attempted this at all, you'll quickly find out that you aren't capable of doing that unless you are like a professional grade level or potential player. It ain't happening. You aren't keeping the ball up any more than maybe twice. Three times might be very good, but if you see our boy doing it, he's keeping it up, you know, for 15 straight hits or something like that. Top pros in the world would also have difficulties with this exercise. So it ranges the gamut from beginner all the way to super advanced. And we did that so that it could, because we don't know who the audience is going to be, right? We don't know. We want to be able to be like, hey, if you're just starting out, this stuff is good. If you're intermediate, this stuff is good. If you're really advanced, this stuff is good. Is it going to transform your high level player, you know, that this person is mentioning their son is at, to something higher or more special? I don't know. I think there's a lot more involved in becoming a top level player, like a professional. I'm going to presume they want their kid to be a pro, okay? Because they're saying he doesn't need intermediate stuff. He's super advanced. There's so much more involved, way beyond the technique and the tactical. At that stage, what really takes hold is the mentality and the physical side of the equation above and beyond everything else. So will this program develop you mentally? No. Will this program develop you physically? Well, I can't change your genes. So if your genetics are such that they are what they are, you know, there's no changing that. And you can do the physical stuff as much as you like, but you're going to really struggle. If, you know, just recently, Cesc Fabregas came out again, and maybe we can inject this into the episode.
Trainings nowadays is nothing compared like before. Before it was very technical, tactical. Now it's physical first, and then tactical and technical, you know, tactical more, and then technical the last little bit, because all the coaches, they tell you exactly how they want to play, what you want, what they want you to do, how you have to do it, when you have to do it. There is 5 substitutions, so it's very easily that you will get substituted in a game, 50% chance. So everything is changing slowly, and the freedom that I had in the first 12, 13 years of my career compared to what I had the last 6, 7 years, different. It's like day and night. That's why maybe, you know, if I had, again, someone like Arsene Wenger or Guardiola, maybe at the age of 28, 29, when after Mourinho left Chelsea, mm-hmm. I think my career would have kept going the same way. Mm-hmm. But having that contrast, I still adapted, but obviously physicality is not my biggest strength. You know, once you lose a little bit of that in today's football, it's more difficult to have an impact, yeah.
Cesc Fabregas came out again saying how football has changed so much. Even when he left Arsenal, or left Barcelona rather, the last 3 or 4 years of his career, he wasn't important anymore because the physical part of the game took over. You know, they started preferring more physical central midfielders than the skillful ones like him, Xavi or Iniesta or Busquets even. And so even a world-class player like Cesc Fabregas started getting screwed because of his physique. So the masterclass is not going to help you on the physique side, and it's not going to help you on the mentality side. I don't know what else to say, Ben. It's a very difficult judgment call for me. I never tell people, oh my God, you must purchase the program. It's going to you're going to kill it now. It's too hard. It's so context dependent. And to finalize the question, yes, his son, you can give the account credentials to your son. Your son can log in himself, take a look at all the exercises that are there, and formulate his own routine if he'd like.
Right. No, great. Buy this course and become a pro, or your money back guaranteed.
No, zero chance, Benny. Unless you are a MLS franchise president or general manager or something like that, then I'll go forth with that guarantee. No problem. Because I know your son's going to be given opportunities.
Yeah, for sure. I would kind of disagree with you a little bit on where you say the course doesn't develop you or your mentality, because I think within the philosophy level or the philosophy lessons, there's a lot that you can gain from that. You know, you talk about the 5 components of player development, possession soccer, elite soccer player characteristics. But I think the most value that you get is hearing all of this come from Brian. And obviously we see where Brian is at now. And I think for younger players, even if they can have a small taste or have an impact on Brian, I think it really does help their mentality out for sure. But I think the other thing that's important to note, Gary, is that this program is not, you don't give it to your son or daughter and in 3 weeks, you know, they've completed it. This is like a lifelong, or however long you're going to be playing in your career. Like, these are the things that you should be working on. And you mentioned, right, beginner to intermediate to expert, like, You know, I have tried majority of the wall repetition stuff, and obviously I played soccer all my life, and I cannot complete, you know, some of the stuff that you see Alex doing or Jorgito. And so there's so much that you can gain from it, but it's not going to be like you open the course and in 2 weeks you're done with it. It's, you know, this is, you're going to have to keep chipping away at it for as long as you continue to play in the game. So I know, in terms of my mentality comment, do you agree that it does help? I know maybe you mean in terms of mentality, you mean like the way that they play or their resilience on the field. Is that kind of more what you're referring to?
I'm referring more to
like habits, work habits, and
yes. Like the things that truly enable you to become the best that you can be is
right.
Are your habits and your consistency and your discipline, those sorts of things, an online course or even a in-person course we had a discussion about this, Benny. It's kind of the nature versus nurture thing. In many respects, either you have it or you don't, right? And then that's the nature. And on the nurture side, it's going to fall predominantly on your family environment and the environment of friends that you hang out with. And what group do you spend most of your time around? Those are truly your role models. Those are truly the ones that are going to steer the way you comport yourself and your habits, Benny. And if those things are not correct, then it doesn't matter how good your coach is, how many face-to-faces you have with your coach, how many times you open up the online course or whatever, you're screwed. So that's really what I meant, Benny. Yes, there's a lot of good stuff in the program that is in the written word, or you can hear Brian talk and what it takes, what are the pitfalls, and we talk about mentality, but you know, because you know us and you know everything that has been accomplished and you know what our former players have accomplished and you know the failures that exist and you know in many respects why many of those failures exist, and most of all it usually comes down to the mentality component, and no online course is going to help you with that, in my opinion. Right. Maybe there's one out there that exists. I haven't come across it.
Or yeah, maybe you invent the next one, Gary. 343 mentality course.
Yeah, but Benny, it's just impossible. Like, you have to be the one when the alarm goes off at 6 a.m. to say, even though you're dead tired, you have to be the one to say, you know, fuck it, I'm getting up anyway and I'm going for a run or I'm going for, you know, my workout or whatever, versus being the one who says, I'll snooze or, I really don't have to, you know, I did it yesterday. Like there's just no way I can help you with that.
Yeah, for sure. No, it has to come from your inner desire to get better, and it's not easy. You know, everybody says they want to be the best. Everybody says they want to make it to the top, but not a lot of people are willing to put in the work. I mean, you look at Kobe. I know we've mentioned Kobe so many times on this podcast, but Kobe would say, I get up at 4 a.m., go to training, come home, breakfast, take my kids to school, back to training. Then I have practice with the team. Then I hit the gym. Then I do one more shooting session and just, you know, repeat every single day of his life. And that's why he made it to the top. You know, he worked harder than anybody else.
It truly has to be part of your identity, Benny, because if it's not part of who you are as a human, that, hey, I'm Carlos, this is who I am, this is what I do, right? If that's not the case, then all kinds of external factors can knock you off your path. A girl comes into your life, oh, you know what, I like going out with the girl more, or maybe you have a kid, or maybe you get married, or maybe, I don't know, you have a long-term girlfriend, and it's like, you know what, family is what matters most, you know, not me getting up at 6 a.m, you know, and leaving the warmth of my wife, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, or leaving my kid, you know, to go on this trip, you know, for a week, you know, I shouldn't be doing that, you know, family first, you know, it has to be, it's, you either have it or you don't, man. I don't know how else to say it. That's how I see it.
Yeah, 100%. Well, hopefully we're able to answer those two questions for for the people that emailed us. And, you know, as the audience knows, leave comments for us because they spark a lot of conversation. And yeah, maybe we can hear from the audience, you know, any topics that they want to hear next or what they want to hear from you, Gary, from the man.
Yeah, we just had a toxic comments episode that we released this week. I also don't want to signal to the audience that only if your comments are toxic will they be addressed. You know right. What I mean? Absolutely not. A lot of the things that you and I talk about, Ben, are stimulated by the good commentary that we receive, the honest requests for information that we receive, you know, either privately or publicly. And the more of those that we get, the more of those we'll address. Like, look, we haven't really singled out and said, hey, Jorge Sanchez on YouTube asked us X, Y, and Z. And so we address it, but we address it nonetheless.
Yeah. I saw a comment on YouTube, Gary. Somebody was saying that they were listening to the episode on Spotify, I think. And he was like, oh, I've commented on there. I don't know if you read those comments or not. Do you?
No, I had no idea that we had comments on Spotify.
Yeah, me too. I was like, I didn't even know you could leave a comment on a Spotify podcast. But so yeah, YouTube is the way to go.
All right. Good, man. This is a good episode.
Yeah, we touched on a lot of good things, man.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.